VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning and it's 10 o'clock. And that can only mean that this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And for anybody listening on the internet, if you are not in Northeast Florida today, you should be.
Absolutely. It is beautiful, beautiful day for the Gate River Run, who one of the competitors is my wife.
Really?
And I saw just a minute ago that some people have already finished, and I'm guessing one of them is not her.
I would guess that same thing. It'd be a bet you couldn't get anybody on the other side of. Nothing personal.
No. But, yeah.
Yeah, but what? Hey, I mean, how fortunate can you be? You throw this event, and I know how hard the people work on it, and it comes to the morning when it's actually going to happen, and you get this day.
Yeah.
Does not get any better.
Read they had over 17,000 runners today. That's pretty impressive.
And I'll promise you, never will one of those be me.
Well, if it wasn't on Saturday, I would have been out there.
It's a difference between you and me. That and 30 years or whatever. Never mind. Anyway, here we are again on Saturday morning, live in the studio. Lines are open, 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Area code 904. I remind you every week, and I will continue to do so, that not all financial radio programs are created equal. What happens with most of them is that they're in the can. That means pre-recorded. You have absolutely no input as to what the subject matter will be. With us, it's different. You call the show at 222-TALK. We put you to the head of the line, and you control what you want us to talk about. So give us a call. We will have a trivia question that I'll probably set up right after the first break. For the regulars, thank you and welcome back. If you happen to be new, or if you're driving around or listening to the radio because of the river run, stick around for a while. Maybe you'll find out a few things that you didn't know before. Maybe come up with your own questions. We'll be happy to answer them. We'll tell you a little bit more about how to get in touch with us, and then we'll tell you a little bit about someone who actually did that, which is a really neat story that Adam will tell you all in a little while. So we did say last week, if you remember, that we expected that the market had gotten a bit overheated too much too fast, and that we were expecting a little pullback. I would say we pretty much nailed that one. And we had also said, if you recall, is this something you should do something about? And we said no. And Friday really put the confirmation on that, I would say.
Yeah, if you were looking for a pullback to find a buying point, this probably wasn't it. Everything did drop this week a little bit, but it was more of a pause than a real significant pullback. I mean, the S&P was down 0.4%, the Dow 0.5%, and the NASDAQ 0.2%. So it wasn't much of a move really over the course of the week, although four of the days were down. And then on Friday, we did see a little bit of a bounce back. So that was not bad, because one of the recurring themes over the last 2 years as we've been doing the show has been the way that the market has reacted to positive economic data being released. And what we really didn't like was every time the news was positive, the markets dropped. And the reason for that was that meant that we were closer to a rate hike. And that's still
fear of the Fed.
Yep. Still the case now, in that jobs report that came out on Friday, which I'll get to more of in a little bit, was very positive, and so therefore that means that the economy is doing well, and that means a rate hike is pretty much, I would put it at about 99% for next week.
I was thinking it was imminent.
Yeah, more or less. And instead of instead of a really bad day on Friday, we had a good day. So I like when the market reacts positively to positive news, as opposed to being controlled by what the Fed is going to do or not do.
Well, I think it was set up on Wednesday when ADP reported. You remember Joe Biden's favorite three-letter word, don't you?
What's that?
J-O-B-S.
No, I don't remember that.
You political junkies out there will remember that. And it was jobs week, and I think the ADP report actually convinced everybody that it didn't really much matter what's going to happen Friday. This rate hike is going to happen.
Yeah, the report on Friday was really a confirmation of what we heard on Wednesday, but still seeing a positive reaction, in my mind, is a very positive sign for the market.
Exactly.
So despite the down week for stocks, money didn't really flow out of stocks into other areas. We saw bonds drop, gold and silver drop, oil drop, and real estate drop.
Yeah,
so
big time oil drop.
For the most part, diversified portfolios this week probably dropped more than equity-heavy portfolios because it was just down across the board. So it's unusual when money doesn't flow out of one thing into another. But we've actually been seeing that a lot this year, as most of the rally has been broad-based. Everything's been going up. So I feel like money's either going into cash or out of cash into
equities. And a lot of it's sector rotation.
Yes, exactly.
And that's based on Fed expectations. What's going to happen to the dollar and to gold and to oil and things like that if the rates go up? Well, I think the reaction is actually a dramatic overreaction, but it does cause that in the market. And when enough money moves, you see drops here and gains there.
Yep, absolutely. And then a lot of the reaction was to the oil this week, too. It dropped 9%, and the energy companies dropped along with it. Now, my theory or speculation is that that will not be sustained, but we'll see if that proves true.
Yeah, the fear is that the producers are ramping up production too quickly, and I honestly don't think that's going to last because OPEC's finally looking like they might do something.
Yeah, but the problem is the U.S. producers. Are they getting ahead of themselves?
Yeah, I think they probably are a little bit.
Fracking and sand oil and things like that. So it'll be interesting to follow energy over this next year. We had a really good year in energy last year, which followed a really terrible year in 2015. Mm-hmm. So it's been the most volatile of the asset classes recently. So there was a lot of economic data released this week, and in general, it was really strong. I mentioned the government non-farm payrolls earlier and the ADP payrolls, and the ADP came out and showed that 298,000 jobs were created in February versus an expected 187. So not quite double, but pretty close. That is a really impressive report.
It's either a really good sign for the job market or a really bad sign for experts everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. That was a pretty poor guess on their part.
They make almost nothing but poor guesses if you follow them long enough.
Also true.
Who are these guys?
The Friday report confirmed that. It showed a gain of 235,000 jobs versus an expected 200,000. And then also the other positive news was wage growth, which showed positive momentum, rising from 2.5% year over year to 2.8% year over year, which is the highest number we've seen since the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. So,
There was more good news on the household survey.
Yeah, absolutely.
447,000. And the one thing no one ever talks about, but I am very interested in, they talk about the participation rate, which went up to 63, but part-time workers dropped 136,000.
Nice.
Now, that's where all the jobs have been coming from over the last 8 years is part-timers. Well, here we are. A lot of that 136,000 went from part-time to full-time, which makes them consumers.
Exactly. And a lot of those jobs were added in the construction field, 58,000 of them, and mining and logging jobs. So those have been disappearing for 3 years at a pretty rapid pace. It's good to see those areas starting to come back.
It really is. And part of it was promised, and the surprising thing to most of us who follow these things at all is that some promises actually come true. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that and how hard it is to keep some promises after the break. So when we come back, I'll have the trivia question for you. We're going to talk a little bit more about some things that happened recently, and then we'll get on to other topics. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment, or this, not the segment, but the trivia question that I'm about to give you is sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. It's tax season. It's almost April 18th. I love saying that. April 18th this year.
A few extra days. Yeah.
Anyway, because it's on my mind, it's on a lot of people's minds, I decided to talk a little bit about it. How many hours do Americans spend annually on their tax returns to the nearest billion with a B hours? That it's a whole number because I want the closest number of billions of hours spent on tax returns. The fact that I can even say that is scary.
It's a big, it surprised me. I guessed low.
Yeah. And it is what it is, but boy, it shouldn't be what it is. I got more to say about that too. Anyway, let's wrap it up a little bit.
Sure.
You wanted to mention another?
Yeah, there was one other interesting note this week, and it has to do with sentiment in the markets. And this week, neutral sentiment, also known as the undecided group, dropped to the lowest level in some time, which means that investors are feeling strongly one way or another about the market. The majority of these people committed to the bearish camp, as bullish sentiment is down to 30%. So when investors are this pessimistic, the contrarian in me wants to run out and buy everything in sight.
This is really good news, people.
It is. When individual investors are bearish, the market tends to do well. It's yep. very unusual. And that's been the case throughout this bull run. And I think the reason a lot of them are bearish right now is that a lot of them missed out on a lot of this over the last 7 years. And so they hate this market and now they feel it's too high.
Yep.
And they don't want to get in at the high point. But in reality, who decides that it's too high?
It was too high at 15.
Exactly.
16, 17, all 18.
All of the above.
Yeah, we have this mental thing where every 1,000 points is too high. And yet the market just keeps trampling on the thousands. So you cannot let that bother you. Would I dive headlong into the market right now? Not really. But you got to never be too afraid. We have some people in our day jobs who, somebody's going on vacation for a couple of weeks. And we don't want to do anything right before you go. Then all you're going to do is worry about it on vacation. There's never a perfect day to get in. 2 weeks. It's not a foot race like the gate run. It's a little bit of time. You can take your time. If you do your upfront planning first and do your buying as you feel like it or as time permits and when you're not otherwise occupied, you'll be fine. No one will remember in 5 years what day you entered the market, and exactly. that includes you.
Exactly. And if you set out a buying schedule over a few months and stick to it, really, if the market fluctuates even 5%, is that going to make or break your total savings over time? Absolutely not. Either way,
besides,
if it goes up 5, down 5.
If you're going over time and the market starts to fall, you're buying cheaper every week. Every month.
Exactly. And if you miss out on a couple percent upside, it's not going to make or break you. It really isn't.
Mm-mm. Don't lose any sleep over that one. Wait, why don't you tell folks how to get hold of us in our day job and then run that into a little exchange that we had with a fella through internet goodies.
Yep.
It was very interesting to me and probably tells us that we're at least doing something right.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in our day jobs, we are fee-only financial planners and we are fiduciaries. And that is a big deal these days as the government is passing the fiduciary rule, which is going to make the playing field even. So in a way, it benefits us, and in a way, it doesn't. But you should know that if you go to see a financial planner, pick a fiduciary, one that has held to that standard. It is the only way to go.
And that includes fee-only certified financial planners like us.
Exactly. And we are located out in Jacksonville Beach, but we're right off the Marsh Landing Parkway exit of Butler Boulevard, so we're easy to get to from all points in the city. And if you don't want to make the trek out there, you can always find us online at www.vanweefinancial.com, where we have lots of interesting things on our website, including our blog, which we update at least once a week. We try and do twice. And we talk about things that we talk about on the radio and some that we don't. And our podcasts of this radio show are always available on our website as well. So those get updated shortly after the week starts, usually Monday or Tuesday. So if you miss a show, you can always find it there. And if you're into Facebook, it's facebook.com/VanWeFinancial or Twitter at VanWeFinancial. And lastly, if you're one of those people that doesn't like calling radio shows, but you have a question, you can always email us at info@VanWeFinancial.com. And we actually received an email from Ohio this week from, at that email address from a guy named Joe. And Joe was wondering about our thoughts on an article by Bill Gross. And if you don't know who Bill Gross is, he is the bond guru that was involved with PIMCO, which is an excellent company. And they run a lot of great bond funds, including our favorite bond fund.
Right.
And he was quoted as saying, don't be allured by the Trump bull market. So Joe wanted to know what our thoughts were about that. And as much respect as I have for Bill Gross.
On the bond side.
Exactly. I also have noticed he's been all over Bloomberg lately and the other financial shows saying that the same thing, that the rally's overdone, there's a lot of risk in the market and yada, yada, yada. But the thing is, Bill Gross is, if you read his comments, he's clearly a Democrat.
Mm.
And so I just wonder when I read things like that, and I know that he has missed out on the bump since the Trump election, I wonder if those comments are political or based on a bunch of economic research. Yeah. So that was my take on it. And I emailed Joe that, and hopefully it was good advice. Cause I think that when the economic data that's coming out is as positive as we've seen it over the last 3 months, that the market should respond accordingly. And it has been.
As is consumer sentiment, as is small business sentiment.
Exactly. And sentiment doesn't drive the markets, but it's really tough to get positive momentum in the markets without positive sentiment from the consumers.
And we've been arguing for how long now that what this country needs is revenue enhancement, and I don't mean in Washington, D.C. The companies that sell things and are listed on the exchanges have been doing very well profit-wise, but a lot of that's because of buybacks and downsizing and all that. What they need is more sales. How do you get more sales? You need more customers. How do you get more customers? You make people consumers, which means you put them back to work, or if they're working part-time, you make them full-time. The promises that are being made are hitting these people right where it counts, and all of a sudden they believe that they're going to be earning money into the future now, they will be employed, and that they can go out and buy things. And that is what the big cycle looks like. When you improve someone's sentiment, when you improve their economic status, and they go out and buy, we just do nothing but benefit.
And part of Bill Gross's argument is that we're only seeing about 1.9% GDP growth. Well, that's backward looking.
Yes.
So you really have to look forward at what we think GDP growth will be over the course of the next year. And that's what the market is looking at, not what happened last year.
These are the same people that predicted the market crash when Trump was elected.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same people like Mark Zandi, who I don't mind mentioning names at all when they speak in public and they get it so screwed up. Chuck Schumer refers to Zandi as a conservative Republican economist. He is a lifelong registered Democrat who is a Keynesian, not a monetarist, as is Janet Yellen, as was Bernanke, as was Greenspan, because that's what you learn when you get a PhD from any of the Ivy League universities. They worship the ground that John Maynard Keynes walked on, and they are wrong, which is why they miss everything. Janet Yellen said, there's no housing bubble. And she was a president of the San Francisco Fed.
Arguably one of the hardest hit areas of the housing crisis.
It is truly incredible, people. But I did want to ask you, how did Joe find us? Here, some random fella in Ohio comes up with us from What source?
He was searching through podcasts and came across ours.
Just that easy.
Yeah, and our podcast can be found on our website, on SoundCloud.com, on iTunes, and on Stitcher.com. So lots of different ways to find it. No matter how you listen, you should be able to locate us. There isn't that many Van Wees out there. If you search for that, I bet you can find it.
And there is no excuse to ever miss the show when you know you can pick it up that way. Lines are open, 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. And we do have the trivia question standing out there. To the nearest billion man hours, how many hours are spent by Americans in preparing their tax returns annually? And once we get that number out there, I'll take an economic look at it from the standpoint of what does this cost us? And I've got an answer for how can we make it better. All right, I had a dumb commercial a dumb headline of the week that I wanted to bring up here. 21 GOP senators call for more foreign workers to replace blue-collar Americans. Don't you think we're a little premature in calling for more immigrant workers when we got 5 million unemployed males with no responsibilities like childcare in this country that are not even in the workforce? And while the participation rate did creep up to 63%, it is still a long ways from saturating this market. I thought the sentiment lately was for getting Americans back to work. We issue plenty of visas. If you're going to get some rocket scientists, that's fine. But blue-collar Americans, come on, people, wise up. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-TALK, 222-8255. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, because, my gosh, the weather's perfect and your lawn is probably going nuts. Give Troy a call at 662-9794. Trivia question sponsored by First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. How many hours do Americans spend annually preparing their tax returns to the nearest billion, with a B, hours? That is a lot. Special note to some distressed people in Jacksonville. A lot of you know that CSX is undergoing a pretty dramatic restructure right now, and there are a lot of our friends and neighbors who are being let go or early retired or whatever you want to call it, downsized out of CSX. I would like you all to know that if you are one or if you know one, taking a very good look at your retirement benefits that you're bringing out of there, doing 401k to IRA rollovers, that sort of thing. That is our specialty. Anyone who wants to come in and talk about it, we never charge for an initial consultation. So look us up on the website, VanWeeFinancial.com, or give us a call at the office. That's 904-685-1505. And if you'd like to come in and talk about your future and what can be done about this, it is the perfect time, because there's going to be a lot of misery out there, and there'll be a lot of annuity salesmen that are beating to your doors and that sort of thing. So if you want a good objective look at what this means to you, then give us a call. I also wanted to just mention the political nonsense that's going on briefly, in that they're trying to figure out how to repeal and replace Obamacare, as everybody knows. Probably the biggest financial problem that most of us face is health insurance costs and health care costs, which really should be separated for purposes of these discussions, but they tend to all get bound up and clogged up in Congress. I have said many times on this show and long before the show that one of the major problems with the way things are done in D.C. is called the Byrd Rule. That's B-Y-R-D. That was Senator Byrd's rule that your budget projection numbers, which is what CBO has to work on, have to go out 10 years. A lot of what's being objected to now is the return out in years 8, 9, and 10 of things like the Cadillac tax. There is no intention by anyone to bring that back. It has to be put in there to satisfy the numeric part of this thing over 10 years. So it's a pretend number. The whole system is a pretend system. I have said over and over that when any politician puts his or her name on any bill, on any law, on any rule, that the second they are out of Congress, there should be an automatic sunset, and that rule, law, or bill ought to be invalidated so that the new people in the new Congress can take a look at it and say, either it didn't work, so we're not going to redo it, or it was neutral, so we're not going to redo it, got enough laws already, or it worked, and then they can present their version of it to the new Congress. So it is with the Byrd Rule. You want to fix this stuff, folks? Go in Monday morning, repeal the Byrd Rule, put a real solid look on this thing, and we will fix the health insurance industry, but not this way. It's really bad, and we're going to wind up suffering, all of us. The biggest financial planning decision that Adam and I deal with our clients day to day is for the ones who would like to retire early and can't figure out what to do about health insurance, which the world calls health care. But we really have more of a health care crisis now than an insurance crisis, because a lot of people have insurance, but they can't afford to use the health care. So you have to look at these things as two problems and solve them. And at that point, financial planning ought to take a turn for the better. So that's my little rant for the day. Well, first one. I got another one coming up. But first, Adam.
Yes.
Yeah. Monkey's uncle, I call it, which is not exactly what it's really called, is it?
No. So if you remember a few shows back, we were talking about the group that is most likely to get involved in financial fraud.
It wasn't elderly widows.
No. In fact, it was kind of the opposite of elderly widows.
Yeah. And it was a very surprising study, and I'm glad I found it, and I'm glad I brought it up. And this is a classic.
Yeah, it was actually middle-aged married men who are actually would probably describe themselves as conservatives, but they're most likely to get caught up in financial fraud because
they are— And upper income, too.
Yes, and upper
they're
income.
They're not destitute.
Right. So they have some money, and they want to turn it into a lot of money, and they want to do it quickly, and they're aggressive in their financial outlooks, and those are the people that are actually the most likely to get involved with fraud. So there's a podcast that I listen to that's geared towards those types of people, those middle-aged married men, and I keep hearing an advertisement for something called Rich Uncles, and it's an investment thing. And so I looked into it a little bit more, and I spoke about this about a year ago, but it just keeps coming up, and I just think it's such a funny thing, because who's going to invest in something called Rich Uncles?
Not
No, it's such a weird name. And it turns out it's a private REIT, and that stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. I have nothing against REITs. They're a pretty popular investment vehicle for owning real estate, and they tend to pay higher dividends than many other investments because they are forced to return a certain amount of their income to the investors every year.
90%.
A couple of things that really bother me about this is that it's everywhere. Their advertising costs must be astronomical. So that's kind of red flag number one. If it's costing them that much to acquire customers, then why do they need to? If it was so good, word of mouth would have taken over at some point, like on a hot ETF or a hot mutual fund, and people would just know about it and they could stop advertising. But they don't. They keep advertising. The second is that they almost guarantee a return in the ads. They don't exactly guarantee it, but they promise you around a 7% return. And we're in a less than 1% interest rate environment. So anytime I hear those numbers, I start to get a little bit wary. How do they do it? So Rich Uncles is a Newport Beach-based company. It's also listed as Next Regen Real Estate Company. And from their website, I learned that they buy commercial properties and charge rent to tenants under triple net leases. All seems good. They then say they will pay 90% of the income to the investors. That all consistent with the way a REIT's supposed to work. The rich uncles are actually Ray Werda, who is listed as the chairman of the CBRE Group, which is a huge commercial real estate brokerage firm. So kind of gives them a little bit of clout in the industry that he was associated with CBRE. The other uncle is Harold Hoffer, a lawyer with a real estate transaction experience. The president is named Mark Makler, and he is listed as a successful entrepreneur, which is pretty vague. Sorry, Howard Makler. It turns out that you can invest in rich uncles with as little as $500, but you have to have a net worth of $250,000. When you click on the How It Works section of their website, you have to give them your information to create a login. Red flag. If you can't find out how it works without giving them your information, that is not a good sign. A little more digging found out that Rich Uncles is accredited with the Better Business Bureau and has an A rating. They also claim to be public, but are they? They have a public filing with the SEC, which can be found on the internet. The answer to the question is no, because Rich Uncles is actually a privately traded REIT. Privately traded REITs are something of a fad these days, and they don't have exactly a great track record.
I have experience in those.
The problem is that your investment isn't very liquid, and your principal may not be available to you when you want it back. Another problem can be the payout. They say they pay a 7% dividend annually, but some of it, turns out, could be a return of capital.
Exactly.
So you're getting your own money back. And a quick Google search showed me plenty of message board complaints that much of their dividend was actually a return of capital, and people were very unhappy about that.
Which is the ploy that the annuity people use.
If you need more information on why not to invest in this, check out this recent Facebook post, which I'll put up on our website this week. And they say how a 7% dividend and a 2% annual price appreciation on the properties can actually lead to a 12% return. Seven plus two is nine.
Well,
yeah, the math.
Oh, maybe it's seven times two. No, that doesn't work.
No, the math just didn't add up. And so check that out on our website this week. It's really interesting. And just be very wary of investing in private REITs.
And when you're not done yet investing and not investing in things, I'll give you another one to not invest in right after the break. And you probably have heard the commercials for these also. And it is, to me, one of the scariest and most misleading things that I could ever think of. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And once again, lines are open, 222-8255. The trivia question is still out there. How many hours do Americans spend preparing their tax returns annually to the nearest billion hours? All right. Heard a TV or a radio ad the other day on various local stations. Don't even know if they're playing it on this one. But it was about an exciting investment opportunity, which is for people who want high returns, like 20 to 35%, with little or no risk, hardly any of your own money, and only working 5 to 10 hours a week.
Well, so, sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be an idiot if you weren't intrigued by something like that, right? So the traveling troupe is coming around to Jacksonville, and they're going to put on seminars about investing in tax liens, which, according to them, have very high returns with very little risk, hardly any of your own money, and hardly any work. It sounds fabulous, right? There might be a couple things you need to know. I quoted John Lovitz from Saturday Night on this one. Sure, That's the ticket. So I know a lot about a few things. I know a little about a lot of things, and this probably falls into the later category there. That I know a little bit about tax liens. I would say I know enough to be dangerous, and of course I would absolutely never get involved. But let's talk about why. Whether you are seasoned in these things or not, when you hear these commercials, you are going to be, if they have their way, misled. Tax liens are a little tiny niche in the investment in real estate market, and they absolutely can produce large returns. That is not a lie in any way, shape, or form. But will they? Now, generally speaking, the tax lien is generated when property owners fail to pay the property taxes. The taxing municipality has the right, depending on where they are, the laws, the time, and all that, to place a lien on the property. Eventually, this lien can lead to foreclosure, and the property can be sold. So when the municipality has run out of patience trying to get their money back, they will sometimes decide to auction the rights to the foreclosure in the form of a tax lien, which goes to the highest bidder. Once the buyer has the lien, he or she has the right to collect interest from the property owner on the amount that they paid in to get the taxes satisfied. And during that time, they can delay the foreclosure process. So the interest rate they can charge varies by state, something you have to know, from about 5% to 36%. So if the property owner is eventually able to repay the taxes and sends you an interest check, you get a nice little paycheck, everybody's happy, you walk away. But if not, then you move on to the next process, which is foreclosure and sale. Now, when that happens, the lien holder is in the first position, even ahead of the mortgager. So that's a real good thing for your security. Does that make it safe? Does it make it right? Let's think about this. Each lien is attached to an individual property, so it is imperative to know something about the property to which it is attached, starting with the neighborhood. What's the neighborhood doing? Are property values on the rise? Are they on the fall? Have they gang problems? Does it have a nice set of families around and everything's copacetic? Are there structural problems on this property? I certainly would be very suspicious if I didn't understand whether or not there were termite problems, for instance. How about environmental concerns? Are there things on that property that might be of interest, shall we say, to government agencies where maybe you've got a funny-looking frog or something? Who knows? What if there were toxic spills? Who knows? Anything that is environmental can really harm your ability to get that property sold. How about this one? Are the owners possibly capable of paying the bills? Yours?
How did they get it?
Whatever.
Well, and if they got a tax lien on them in the first place, mm-hmm. that really should make you question whether or not they have the ability to pay.
It should. Now, knowing all these things about the home, what are your chances of selling it for a profit versus a loss? Again, the good news is you're ahead of the mortgage holder. Now, you also have to understand your state rules or maybe notification requirements for someone buying the lien, where they have to give the notice to the property owners X amount of time in advance and that sort of thing. Now, let's talk about using your own money or using somebody else's. Somebody has to come up with some money to pay these things. The municipality is not going to hand it to you and say, please try to collect. That is the job of a bill collector, not a tax lien buyer. Somebody's got to put up the money, and I'm going to give you two guesses who that somebody is. You only need one. You may be looking at a property with other liens on it, mechanics liens or something like that. You owe it to yourself to know that, because other people might have a shot at what you think is all yours. This leads me first to conclude that the seminar commercial is grotesquely misleading, or possibly worse. What is left out to me is a huge lie of omission, and that is a very personal thing that I want everyone to think about. Are you the type of person who can look a homeowner in the eye when that homeowner is at approximately the lowest point of his or her life, demand a high interest rate, or foreclose and kick them out? Is that you? You had no interest in that property till that minute when you bought the tax lien. I am not in the business of kicking people out of their houses. I understand when municipalities have to do it, mortgage holders have to do it, you don't have to do it. I couldn't in 100 years look at someone who was destitute, trying like heck to keep their home, and then say, yeah, you're out of here. I just can't wrap my brain around it. So stocks and bonds, things that we invest with, are very impersonal. If you buy a stock or a bond, sell a stock or a bond, you have no idea who used to own it or who's about to own it. It goes through an exchange, boom, it's all electronic. There is no emotion tied to these things except the emotion you get from either making or losing the money on the trade. So it's not even available to you as if you would even care. Taking someone's home from them, even if that foreclosure is inevitable based on their circumstances, is very personal to me. And I am just not the type who would ever want to get involved. This constant drumbeat in the media of high returns with little or no risk, it keeps getting louder and louder, more and more brash. 13.2% returns on annuities, very little work, no risk. Folks, whenever you hear little or no risk, and whenever you hear great big outsized returns, know that those two things are not compatible.
And if they were, everyone would be doing it.
Exactly. Now, if you picture a bell curve, the way investors measure risk, risk is by definition, when you're talking about investing, variability of return. You might expect a certain return, let's say 10%. On any given year, you're probably not going to get 10%. What are you going to get? Well, you might get 15. You might get 6. You might lose money. You might get 12. Who knows? That is plotted underneath a bell curve. And if you think of a bell curve, we've all seen them. We use them for various things. There is a left side and a right side. And the middle point is called your expectation. Know over time that about half the time you're going to land on the left side and about half the time you're going to wind up on the right side. The more risk, the wider the bell curve. If you think you're going to have a very high return on the right side of the bell curve, know that that same bell curve has a very large loss on the other end.
Absolutely. That is the number one rule of investing.
I cannot.
Maybe number two rule. The number one rule is diversify.
I cannot call that investing. I just can't, and I would never get involved with it. If you are the kind of person who could walk up to these people and say, you and your kids, take a hike. I own your house. You can't pay for it. I'm going to sell it, and you're out of here. Well, then you just go ahead and go to that seminar. But if you know enough about it that you don't want to go to the seminar, fine. But if you go and you're interested, start asking some questions.
You know, it's kind of like the real estate seminars that Angela and Howard talk about. And if you're not in real estate, you're not going to become an expert in investing in real estate by attending a four-hour seminar. It's the same thing with tax liens. There are probably people who do this as a career who are much better at it than you. So just keep that in mind.
That's right. And remember the difference between liquidity and marketability. When you can get rid of something easily, it's called marketable. When you can get rid of something without losing money, it's called liquid. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for sticking around. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.